This episode of No Quarter is sponsored by the Underground Retrocade. You love these games, and the way you want to play them is on the original cabinets. You want to see the side art, you want to feel the controls, and you want to hear aha on the stereo. So next time you're in the Chicago area, swing by the Underground Retrocade, and if you happen to spot me near the Karate Champ machine, you can take on me at the Underground Retrocade. 121 West Main Street, West Dundee, Illinois.
I'm Mike McGinnis.
And I'm Rob O'Hara.
And you're listening to No Quarter, a weekly podcast about classic arcade games with a brand new co-host. How are you, co-host?
Oh, I thought you meant you were getting rid of me.
Well, that person's waiting in the wings, just in case you get out of line and I have to smack you down. You
that's why I keep looking through the blinds at night to see.
that's just leverage. Don't worry about him. That guy standing behind you looking at you while you're recording, just ignore him.
What have you been up to, man?
Not a lot. Kind of trying to remember to play this week's game. It's not, and we'll get into it, but found it sort of forgettable.
Yeah, definitely not. There's a lot of games that are similar to this one. I know exactly what you mean. But you know what is amazing this week? I don't know if you saw this. There's a brand new Star Wars movie trailer.
I did not see that. I mean, I know it's there, but I'm avoiding all of that. I've unsubscribed from any podcast that has been talking about Star Wars, and I don't go to those web pages because I want to know nothing when I go see it.
I'm avoiding spoilers, but I feel like the trailers are fair game. You know what I mean? Like
Carrington said the same thing, and I don't know. I kind of go back and forth. I haven't seen it yet. If I stumble upon it accidentally, I'll probably watch it, but it hasn't happened yet.
It's, well, let me tell you, everybody dies in this new
trailer. Oh. You're fired. You're banned.
No, it's, Star Wars, I saw that, and then I saw a trailer for the new Star Wars Battlefront, which will be, I guess, on the big, I don't have any of the new consoles. I stopped kind of with the PS3 and the Xbox 360. I don't have the brand new stuff. I'm not a big fan of paying money for virtual games that might go away from me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like servers go away and online things or they change things and suddenly I can't play the games that I've purchased. So I'm having a hard time dealing with that. You know, I sure liked my arcade cabinets. I like the cabinets that I have in my garage that no matter what happens, I can always go down and play those. You know what I mean? So
they made games after arcade games?
I've heard rumors, but I don't know. I like physical stuff, so.
I stopped modern gaming, I guess, if you want to call it that. A couple of years ago, there were two or three games in a row that I bought. It was like Fallout 3 and maybe Grand Theft Auto 4 and another one, and they were just so buggy and they would crash to the desktop all the time. And I'm like, and they kept saying, oh, just keep waiting. The patch will come. And, 3 years later, the patch never came. And I just kind of, for whatever reason, at that point, that's sort of where I stopped doing the modern PC gaming experience. And I've never been a console gamer because I can't deal with the thumb controllers and all that stuff. So joystick and two buttons is about what I can handle, maybe three on a good day. so these arcade games and my Apple II games are just about right for me. Yes, yeah. I'm old. Get off my lawn.
I hear you, man. And I have two kids. So when I see a new, like the new Grand Theft Auto and people are like, I've been playing this for, 80 hours. Or that, and I'm like, I don't have 80 hours. You know what I have is put a quarter in and I could play like this week's game, which lasts about 4 minutes if I'm having a really good run. Yeah. And then by that time, either one kid has set something on fire or the other kid has done something horrible to the cat. And then I'm free. Exactly. And I'm free to run off. Yeah. I just don't have the time to invest in those long term games. But hey, we got some news this week.
Well, hit me with some news, Rob.
This last weekend was the Midwest Gaming Classic. We mentioned that last week, and we actually had a couple people mention on Facebook that they found out, like, so this is the historically, No Quarter likes to talk about things right after they've happened.
Right, so you can't actually attend them.
Right, and last week when we mentioned the Midwest Gaming Classic, we, I believe, mentioned it on the day it was happening. So we had somebody who heard that and, like, ran down there, like, they were in that area. You know, in the future, if you know about arcade-related things or whatever, shoot us an email or send us something on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and we'll throw it out there. But we did have a couple...
after it happens, but, yeah.
Right, we'll sit on it. We'll be like, ha-ha, we know something you don't know. You know, we have, like, we can do news like Mad Libs, and we'll just put blanks in. So, like, there will be a great arcade auction at blank.
Random locations and dates. We'll see right, who shows up.
Next week, we'll give you the answer, sure. Right. But the reports I got back from the MGC was that there was more pinball, I believe, than arcades.
Ooh,
and
whoa.
That there were a lot of people were crowded around to play the arcade game. So there was some long lines. Of course, you know, when you get a lot of people interested in something and a limited amount of games, you're going to have some of that, you know. Sure, but
sure. And I know our sponsor, Scott, over at the Underground Retrocade, he always gets a group together and they head down for that because that's right around the corner from him. So obviously, in keeping with our tradition of reporting stuff after you can do anything about it, next year you can go down and say hello.
Right. It's only 51 more weeks till the next one. So that's assuming they have it in the same week.
Dropped us by then, yeah.
Right. So, well, do you have any feedback? Do we have emails? What do we have this week?
Well, I think we got some email. We'll start with a little bit longer one. This one's called Level 257. It's from Sean Courtney in Chicago. Sean, I think, was one of our contest winners from way back when. He's been listening for a long time. We always get good feedback from Sean. And he mentions the Level 257, which is a Pac-Man-themed restaurant, similar to, like, Dave & Buster's, I guess, but more Namco Pac-Man. It's just now opened at the Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg, Illinois. It's like 20 miles outside of Chicago, he says. He went down to visit them, had a good time. And I think we actually mentioned Level 257 way back when it was just announced that they were going to do something like this. There wasn't a lot of detail, and so we didn't have a lot of information to give.
Well, that's funny. I thought you were going to say that we got an email from Daryl Decker, because I saw an email in the inbox from Daryl Decker, who also gave us a big review of Level 257. And you're right. He actually, I think he describes it as an upscale Dave & Buster's. He said that they had dinner for two, and they had some drinks, and dinner was about $85, which I think is... more than I $85. This is true. Is more than I spent on several arcade cabinets that I've owned. I've bought many arcade cabinets for less than $85. That is true. And he mentions a little bit about the games and stuff. So, and like you said, this is a really long email. A lot of good details in here about some of the games that they have. But definitely, and he mentions that, see, this is us being ahead of the curve, that they are having their official grand opening on April 23rd. So, you know, if you want to head down to that. And then he says here at the end, he mentions here at the end, if you are going for the games, you will probably be disappointed. So I would suggest staying on the expressway another 15 to 20 minutes and stopping by the Underground Retrocade. So
there you go.
So there you go. That is probably, you know, I don't know, Mike. I saw his email and I started putting together a list of all the retro arcades that I've been to over the last couple of years. And I didn't realize I've been to this many because there are a lot of them around. And I'm not going to, I mean, I kind of made a mental list here. I'm not going to just sit down and read this list, but you know, we have Cactus Jack's here in Oklahoma. There's the 1984 arcade in Springfield, Missouri, Arcadia Retrocade in Fayetteville. I've been down to Pinballs in Austin. We went to, you and I went to the 1UP.
Yes, we did.
Together in Denver, and I also made it over to the 2UP. That was during the Kong off, mm-hmm. which was fun. I went to Insert Coins in Vegas, the Lost Ark, which is a great name. It's the Lost Ark Aid in Greensboro, North Carolina. I've mentioned that I've been to Galloping Ghost before. I have not been to Underground Retrocade. That is right now the number one on my list. The next time I go up north. So there's just so many of these, and I don't know. This level 257, I always love to hear when another arcade has opened up, especially one that caters, you know, to retro style games and stuff. But I don't know. It almost feels like it's the corporate kind of version, you know what I mean? Versus right. these guys that were there in the original. And I'm not saying that they don't, you know, have an interest or that there's not cool stuff to go see there and stuff. And I'm not trying to talk people out of going. And if you've been to that and, you know, some of the other ones, I'd love to hear about it. But I don't know. It just seems like there's so many of these places to choose from. And, you know, a lot of them are $5 to get in or $10 to get in and play, you know, for all day. $85 for a couple of dinners. And I don't know. It's just a different experience, I guess. It's probably catering to a different group.
Well, and weirdly, this is actually Namco's place. This is like their flagship arcade now. And you would think Namco would remember a little bit of its history and try not to make it such a corporate experience. But I don't know. Maybe they assume that, you know, people like us who were 10 and playing the games then are now in their 40s and 50s and have money like that to spend. I'm looking right now at the Facebook page, facebook.com/257 spelled out. So TWO, et cetera, et cetera. And like the top photograph right there right now is the weekend special is pan roasted duck, lentils, a poi, black pepper, port reduction, buttered leeks and basted mushrooms. And it's kind of like this low lit photo with a expensive bottle of wine in a glass and a very small portion on a very large plate, kind of a dining experience. So $85 doesn't surprise me based on what I'm looking at, but it does make me a little sad.
Yeah. And like I said, it's not saying that it's bad necessarily, but it's different audience that they're catering to for sure. I know that, I just went a month or two ago to the Arcadia. That's the one out in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And those guys, it's $5 to get in. They have a little snack bar thing in the back that reminds me of like, you know, the snack bar that used to be like at a movie theater or skating rink, like that kind of thing. So you get a Coke for $1 and stuff like that. So, you know, when you look at places like that. Last time I was at 1984, it was the same thing. It was $5. And then all the games are on free play and you can play all day long. So this is definitely a different price range for sure, but probably, you know, a different type of experience.
All right, moving on. We got an email from Jack. Jack says, "Hi guys, I just started listening to your podcast, heard about it from the Antic podcast." So I think that would be Kevin Savitz's Antic Atari podcast. Thank you, Kevin. Jack says, "I noticed your image for your podcast is the Space Invaders art. I searched through all the episodes, but didn't see your review for it. Will you be doing that one? And how about Asteroids?" And it took me a second because I thought, I don't think Rob put Asteroids art in the new artwork. And then I remembered that he's looking at the old art with the that Carrington had made. Gorgeous art, but we kind of put that behind us when we move forward into the Rob era. So it's no longer part of our artwork, but I'm sure that we will be doing both Asteroids and Space Invaders at some point.
Yeah, two classic games. And I'm trying to... Yeah, I guess both of those would be easily played in MAME. I was just thinking about the Asteroids. I mean, both of those are ones that don't really have joysticks, but you could play them just as easily with a joystick. So I don't see any problem with that. We'll put them on the list, just for Jack.
Well, that's how we get our games, is that people tell us what to play, and we play it, and then we complain.
You complain. I'm positive. I'm the good cop. You're grumpy cop. what else?
Oh, we got it.
The grumpy eyelashes.
Gamer tag or whatever.
We grumpy got an lashes. Email from Brent over at Broken Token. And Brent... Yeah. Good guys. And Brent commented a little bit about last week's game, the 10-yard fight. We talked about the dip switches. There were some options in there that I thought was kind of weird. There was a dip switch that allows you to freeze the game. There's another dip switch in there that allows you to basically turn off sprite collision so that you could just run for a touchdown. And he said that that the generally accepted explanation for this was to allow pictures of the game to be taken. So instead of trying to take a picture of the game while it's in motion and moving, that you would just freeze the game. And then, you know, when you could turn off the sprite collision so that you could get to higher levels and take different pictures of the game. And he says that Kung Fu Master, which is another game that was made by Irem, it has the same dip switches on there. So that's cool. Probably something they built into a lot of their games.
That makes sense.
I would like to use those dip switches. I wonder if they're on Moon Patrol. Because, God, I could use some help on Moon Patrol.
That's a tough one.
I think that's all I got in the bag. You got anything else in there?
I got one more that was addressed directly to me, but I think this is a good question for the audience and for you as well, Rob. This is from our friend Data Jerk, a.k.a. Egan. He's been a longtime listener, written in a bunch. In fact, I think he provided one of our prizes, a giant Tron repro poster a long time ago. He says, given your years on No Quarter, I assume he means me, you've probably seen a lot of sticks for MAME. I'm looking for a 4-position pre-made stick for MAME. I'm lazy. Worst case, I'll get another X-Arcade, open it up and change it from 8 to 4. I did this with my dual stick, but I'm going to put that back to 8. I'm also looking for a solution for Qbert. Taking a 4-position stick and rotating the entire case 45 degrees isn't working for me. I need to actually move the stick in the housing 45 degrees. In other words, I may have to build my own. I'm looking for your insight, links, etc. Rob, got any ideas off the top of your head?
Boy, you know, I think all of the arcade type sticks come basically as 8-way sticks. I'm thinking through my head of all the ones that I've seen. I mean, like the X-Arcade, are any of those switchable, like out of, without modifying them?
I thought there was one, and I'm drawing, it may have been the Slick Stick Hot Rod, I think it was called, maybe.
Okay.
I don't think they've been made for a while, and I could be totally thinking of a different brand, but I think that one had an actual switch on the back. You had to turn the joystick off and then switch it, but by doing so, it would automatically go from 8 to 4-way play easily. You didn't have to open it up or make any changes. And I'll double check, and if I'm wrong on the brand, then we'll put that in the show notes. But I know that there was one out there. I don't know if it's still made. That doesn't seem to be a common thing for some reason. I think they kind of just assume that everybody would just be so happy with the joysticks that they wouldn't think about things like 4-way and 8-way easy switching.
Well, yeah, if anybody out there knows of any 4-way sticks like that, let us know, and I'll do some research too, and we'll see what we can find.
I mean, you can certainly go to, you know, the arcade parts websites and buy your own and modify it, but it seems like a lot for kind of what Egan is looking for, as he mentions. And what about a solution for Qbert?
Gosh, you know, I think that would be pretty simple if you had a 4-way stick, but the problem is that physically inside there, that thing is going to be mounted. So you're going to have to come up with some sort of system where you could either rotate the way it's mounted, or maybe, you know, pull some bolts out and turn it 45 degrees, maybe have like multiple mounting holes or something like that.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I guess this seems like a lot of work, but if you're a big joystick or a big, big Qbert fan and you really wanted to do it, you could probably find the X-Arcade made the Solo Stick, which is just the one. You could maybe find one cheap on eBay and modify it and just use that, have it permanently, the stick permanently mounted at the 45 degree angle and just use it for Qbert. But for the casual player, that seems like a lot.
Yeah, you'd have to really like Qbert and not own a Qbert machine. You know what I mean? Because there's not that many games that you'd be able to use that stick for.
Right. So if the audience, if you listeners out there have any ideas for Egan, we'll be happy to talk about them on the next show. So let us know if you have any solutions, or you've come up with something, or you know of a product that we're not thinking of. All right, and I guess that's the end of our feedback. Yes, no?
I think so.
All right. Well, let's talk about this week's game. It is Magic Sword by Capcom, and I couldn't care less.
I call this, for the rest of the show, I will be referring to this as Rastan Part 7 or something. So
I think I'm going to call it Black Tiger or maybe...
Golden Axe, Kadash,
Dragons.
Yeah, you know, I went back. I had to go look because this game. Let's see, this was 1990. So I thought I was like, well, maybe it's riding on the coattails of Conan, but Conan is eight. I mean, the movie would be 82. And then Conan the Destroyer was 84. So I mean, it's far enough back that it's not really Conan, but I and all these other games like Rastan, that's 87, Kadash is 87, Black Tiger, which is by Capcom, so it's not like Capcom hadn't already done this, is 1987. So, I mean, there are some little things in this that make it a little bit different, but not enough to, I don't know, it's still like a fraternal twin. I mean, maybe not an identical twin to some of these other games.
This is like the twin that didn't get any of the talent or the look. This is the Danny DeVito of these games.
So like all those games, this is a, I guess, a what did you guys had a great term for this. What was it? Go right and fight? Was
well,
it
this, the, is, this is actually, Quinn gave us this term. It's a fight and go right. It is a fantasy sword swinging, of a fantasy sword swinging version, or variety, as opposed to shoot it, you know, sci-fi or shoot 'em up or something like that. We actually played Rastan recently on the show a few episodes back, Carrington and I. And I think that because it's a little bit later, fortunately, the graphics are better. You know, I remember when I was playing Rastan, like the background was 90 degree angles and repeating patterns over and over. And this one is a little bit more refined than that. And see, the problem already that we're getting into is the only way I can define this game is by comparing it to older, better games, because nothing about this is standout. I mean, the music is not annoying. It doesn't bother me, but it's not great. It doesn't catch me. It's passable, and the action is passable, and the flames, the you know, there's a fire and stuff happening because it's a fantasy game. They're not ugly, they're not, you know, unrealistic or anything, but they're not great either. It's just sort of there. In fact, I had a hard time remembering to play this game because I just didn't think about it when I wasn't playing it.
Yeah, there's not a lot that will bring you back to it. And the one game mechanic I would say that separates this from those other games is that you pick up friends along the way. So you find these keys and you free your little buddies, which reminded me of the Indiana Jones arcade game where you have to go free the kids, you know. Right. So you have these little things and you free them. And then they go with you, and then they're like all those shoot 'em up type games, like the space games where you get another ship and it follows behind you and shoots. I mean, that's exactly what this is you pick up people. There's a barbarian. There's a woman with a crossbow. There's a ninja. I really like that guy. But you pick these people up, and then as you shoot, then they shoot. If you jump, they jump. I mean, they're just like your shadow. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like getting additional firepower. At first, it reminded me at the very beginning when I saw it of Crossbow, because you have like these people following you, you know, just
a little bit.
But unlike the people in Crossbow that would just walk and you know, get hit by meteors or they would just walk into danger, you know, these guys would actually, you know, you could, they would follow along and kind of do stuff, but I don't know, just not great.
Yeah, I found that, so having these little companions along with you is sort of I almost thought of them as just kind of weapon power-ups, you know, like in another game you would run through and open the chest and now your axe comes back to you and you can throw it or it shoots fire or something. And these are a little bit more detached from you, and so they provide a little more eye candy, but really they're just kind of enhanced bullet catchers and weapons for a little while. It feels like this was an apology for not making this a multi, you know, like a four-player game that you could play with your friends. You know, like I'd rather have my friends playing those other three characters and then just these things running along next to me.
Right. And I this is a sign that we're... This is how I got off on the wrong foot in this game. The name of the game is Magic Sword. And when you start out, you have a sword, and it's not magic. That bothers me.
Not even a little bit.
Right. Like, it should be called, eventually, you're going to get a magic sword, but not today. So that pissed me off right off the beginning. I looked on Wikipedia, and Wikipedia has an entire backstory about this game. Did you know that the world you're in is being threatened by the Dark Lord Drachmar, who has control over an evil crystal known as the Black Orb?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I mean, I
because
played
the game
whole
doesn't
thing.
Tell you that.
No, it doesn't say anything. And by the way, it says you have to you're working your way up a tower, and there are 50 floors. I don't know if you saw that. I got to floor. I don't want to give too much away, but I got to the end of floor 2, which is like, what's that like? It's like walking past a flaming building with people at the top saying, help me, help me. And then you're like, well, I got partway up the porch. I didn't get anywhere near level 50 or 40 or 30 or 20 or even 10. So I don't know what Lord Drachmar, which by the way, I called him Lord Dorkmar. I saw it wrong the entire week. I was like, why would they call him a dork? But it's a Drachmar. But the entire time I thought he is at no time during this game was me stealing the black orb threatening Mr. Drachmar. Right. Like, he was safe to sleep. He didn't have to worry about me coming for anything. His lowest level minions did a great job of stopping me from getting to level 50.
Yeah. So the way that works to get your companions is as you fight these monsters, and they're typical bland, boring fantasy sword swinging monsters, dragons, and I don't care what else. And they occasionally would drop a key, and you pick the key up and you would run to these doors, and the door would open and you would get a companion for a little while. And it does keep track at the bottom of how many keys and things like that you've picked up. You do have a life bar. This is it's a quarter muncher. It's designed to entice you to continue to play. You know, when you die, you get the continue countdown, and you can always tell when they've designed it to be a quarter muncher rather than somebody going for a high score, because the high score scoreboard, I guess, is it's up in the left corner, and it sort of blends into the background. You don't really see it. You don't like, there's not a, you know, when you get points and bonuses and stuff, it doesn't pause and tell you, hey, you got a big bonus here for this point. They de-emphasize point gathering as opposed to continuing to play. Unfortunately, there's not enough interesting stuff happening in this game to make you want to continue to play.
Yeah. And let's see, you know, in Elevator Action 2, we got to kill dogs, which was a real highlight of that week. But now we've got, I don't know if there are dogs in this one. There are some wolves or something, but now you get bears, which I guess people don't think of bears as being quite as cute and cuddly as dogs. Like, we're okay with bear killing, but we're against, I don't know where that line is for people, but I thought it was weird that Lord Drachmar would be like, you know, I got to protect this black orb. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send out an entire army of orcs and these little guys that float around with swords. And also I got some bears. So I'm just letting you know in advance, I'm sending some bears down in the tower.
It's very bland, typical play of this type. You fight your way to the right, there's a boss, dragon or whatever, and then you go to the next level, repeat. And, you know, if this game had come out in 1982 or 83, we'd have been, wow, this is amazing. And all the other games would have been compared to this one. Unfortunately, it's so late. And I think so in 1990, I think Capcom had pretty much begun switching their focus over to the fighter games anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if, because this is and we'll talk about the technical stuff here in a minute, but this is a CPS-1 board game. So there were like Mercs and Forgotten Worlds and Strider and Mega Twins and some other games that also share this platform. And I'm wondering if, like, they found a bunch of these CPS-1 boards in the back of a warehouse and said, well, we can't just re-release the old games, just slap something together so we can get them out of here.
Yeah, something that will run on this hardware. Because there's no slowdown in this game. It's not like they're really pushing the hardware. But, you know, one thing that I like about Rastan is, and I'm assuming that's the guy's name, Rastan, Mr. Rastan, whatever, but he's really big, you know what I mean? So he's really detailed, and you can see when he swings, you know, the axe or his sword or whatever, you can see all those things moving. And this, it's like all the things were like really tiny. You know what I mean? Like all the people were small and, I don't know. So, I mean, the backgrounds, I thought the artwork was pretty cool, you know, but, I don't know. It just seemed like the animation of the guy walking was really tight. Like there's only a couple of different frames of animation. Just, you know, didn't seem like a lot of, well, definitely not a lot of time went into, the backstory. I'm going to say that. I think all the money went into Bear's rights. they had to work that angle. So I don't know. It's just not. There's nothing about this that's amazing to me. And another thing, you mentioned where the score was at the bottom of the screen. Is this thing that I never really quite figured out. At first I thought it was my health, but then later I saw my health up at the top. So it's not my health. It was like my magic.
I thought it was your health.
No, the health is up at the top. So it's like a thing that measures how much magic you can use. You know, like a lot of games, the one I always think of is Shinobi, you know, cause you could jump, you can attack, and then you have ninja magic where you press that and it just blows everything up, you know, that's on the screen. And so you can do that in this game as well. But the actual arcade cabinet only has two buttons. It has an 8-way stick. Well, it has two sticks because you can play with a friend. And then you have two buttons. You have jump and you have attack. But if you press both buttons at the same time, then you do that kind of attack that, you know, lightning strikes down and it blows up everything on the screen. But there was some sort of game mechanic, and I looked, you know, I guess it's you have to get a certain item or that level meter has to be, you know, at a certain level or something. But and if you don't do that, or if you don't meet that requirement or whatever, then you can't launch your special attack. So I would get to the boss at the end of the first level and I would be like, haha, I'll show you. And I would hit the buttons and my guy would just jump in the air like a moron. And if I had a buddy with me, he would jump in the air. And then that giant lion thing would just destroy us. And I believe he got the last laugh.
So that was sort of like the since we talked about Star Wars earlier, we'll go with this. It's sort of like that moment in Star Wars where they're trying to get away from the Star Destroyer and he goes, watch this. And he pulls back on the hyperspace thing and he goes, meow, 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 and she's like, watch what?
Right. When it works, it's like a Death Blossom from the last Starfighter. When it doesn't work, it's, when the Falcon's hyperdrive doesn't work again.
Yeah, so I'm looking at a screenshot here of somebody who played much further into this than I did, and it's looks like it may even be the big boss. I'm not sure. It says, you're just in time to relieve my boredom. Come, let's play. And I'm thinking, there's no boredom relief here.
Yeah, I came up with a pretty good strategy for playing this game. It went like this. Start pressing the attack button when the game starts. And when it says, do you want to continue? Stop pressing it. So really that was my strategy was attack, 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 attack. And then occasionally I would jump. And did you, notice that there are hidden treasure chests in this game?
I read that there were. I didn't see any and didn't bother to seek them out.
Once or twice I would be up on top of, you know, one of the platforms and I was trying to attack somebody. So I jumped and swung and a treasure chest just fell out of the sky. But it didn't seem to give me a huge amount of points or anything. So, I mean, I thought it was interesting that it just, I don't know. I thought if this game, like whatever this game is, that aspect's not going to save it. You know what I mean? It's not like I thought it was bad, but I was like, well, crap, it's got hidden treasure chests. Well, now I changed my mind.
So we spent the last 20 or 30 minutes slagging on this game. But let's be honest here. This is certainly not an awful game. There's no outstanding bugs. There's nothing glaringly wrong with it. The music is okay. The graphics are kind of pretty in places. Rob, was there anything that you did like about it?
You know, it's one of those games where I think if you had your, if you go back in time, you go back to 1990 and you and your buddy are in an arcade and you're like, man, I hope we get to play some, D&D this weekend, you know? And your buddy's like, yeah. And then you're like, hey man, this game's kind of like D&D and, you know, and so it's two players and you have a few quarters and you go through there, then, you know, it's not a game that, I mean, I wouldn't have walked away being like, oh, I hate that game forever. I mean, it wasn't bad like that. It would just be, like you said, I don't know. It just seemed like a filler cabinet to me. You know what I mean? Just something that just, it took up space. I can't imagine any kid in the 90s was like, "Mom, please take me to the arcade so I can play some Magic Sword."
I had a very similar thought to yours where, you know, it's like, well, it's all right. We want to swing some swords and play D&D or whatever. But this is like, this is the game that you play when the Rasten cabinet's busy and and the Gauntlet cabinet's busy and the Black Tiger cabinet's busy. And well, this is at least some sword swinging. It does feel very much like a Capcom game. You notice that, especially when the character jumps, because mm-hmm. all the jumps in every Capcom game, every character looks the same when they do it. Not a bad thing, just a way you can tell that you're playing Capcom. Apparently, this is the 11th CPS 1 title released, and I believe it's the last or close to the last. Yeah, I don't know. It felt like it could have been so much more, and maybe that's part of why I don't like it. It just felt really disappointing.
Yeah, and there are, I saw that there are dip switches on the board where you can make this game harder.
Well, maybe that would help. I don't know.
I don't know that I need to do that.
It is a tough game. Like a lot of Capcom's fighter games, or the Fight and Go Right, you know, whether it's Ghosts and Goblins or this or some of the others, it is typically Capcom in that it's very difficult. You die quickly and you die a lot, but that's the point because they want quarters from you.
Right, right. And it's I noticed that usually when I got hit, you have two lives and you have five little life bars. So each time you get hit, it takes away a life bar until you get all the way down to the end and you would die. But when you open these chests that you come along, you'll find like a little heart or a little thing. And when you pick them, you get half of one life bar back. I thought, that's a little stingy, Capcom. Help a brother out. You know what I mean? It's not like you're not going to get to the end of this where nothing has hit you. I mean, there were so many times where, you know, the little floaty guys would come attack me, or in the next level when I know there's a name for this. I should have looked this up, the Easter Island head guy, you know, and he's shooting lasers. And I thought, yeah, come on.
Zardoz or whatever.
Yeah. I took a little bit more than half a bar back would be nice.
This, as I said, this is based on the CPS-1 system, which is a Motorola 68000 at 10 megahertz. Some of them, I guess some of the later ones, and maybe this one was at 12 megahertz. It has a secondary chip, the Zilog Z80 at 3.579 megahertz. There is the Yamaha YM2151 at 3.579 megahertz, and the OKI 6295 at 7.5 megahertz for stereo sound. It features a raster screen, 384 by 224 at 60 hertz, 12-bit RGB color with four levels of brightness, 4096 colors with 3072 colors on screen at any time. This is a board that I guess was bootlegged a lot because they didn't include the encryption system, which showed up on the CP system 2.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I guess the system 2 was released specifically to deal with all the bootlegging going on with this particular board. It was released in 1988 and replaced in 1992 by the CPS 2.
I didn't feel like anything with the hardware, like I said, it wasn't being taxed, you know what I mean? And I thought that the music was good. It wasn't memorable, you know, but sound effects, you know, it's just a normal, it's exactly what you would, like if you close your eyes and you're like, what would a game be like where I am a guy with a sword and I go and I fight, it's this game. This is the one you're imagining. It's just, right. You know.
Very generic.
Yeah. Let's see. And the cabinet itself is just a generic, I mean, the actual physical cabinet is just a generic cabinet. I mean, I don't even know, you know, all the instruction manuals that I found only refer to this as being a kit. So it may not have actually come in a dedicated machine. It may have only been sold as a kit.
That would make sense. I mean, you know, because it's a made for the CPS-1, which was a platform to put other games on. They're, at that point, just shipping the kits out rather than wasting money on a cabinet for a game they know nobody's going to play.
You have the marquee, which says Magic Sword, and it has a Capcom on it, and then it has your guy who looks a lot like He-Man with a ponytail. just like a big, you know, I don't know why this hit me, but I was thinking about like Rastan, Black Tiger and all those types of games and Conan, and it's always a big, huge, muscular guy, but they always seem to have dark hair, like black hair or whatever, you know? So, something about this one where he has blonde hair, I was like, wow, it looks more like He-Man, you know? And then he has this big sword, which again, not magic. the side art is cool. It has the game's name. It says Magic Sword in that big purple kind of medieval text. And it has those Easter Island heads that shoot lasers out of their eyes. So they're shooting lasers. And it has the guy with the sword and a shield. And he has this big belt on that looks just like a WWF title belt, or WWE, I guess, like this big giant gold belt. So yeah, he might be the king of magic swords. We don't really know. The control panel is just kind of generic. It has two swords that are crossed over. But then the bezel of this game is awesome. The bezel that goes around the monitor, you'll have to look this up, because it's all the, it's like faces of all the different people that are in the game. So there's like monsters and skeletons, and your guy is on there, but all the other people that you rescue are all on there. And they it's almost kind of like a, not caricatures, but like comic style, you know, like they have these kind of weird looks on their faces and stuff. It just cracked me up. I really like that. I'm always looking for, whenever I see arcade artwork and things like that, I'm always looking for a picture, like of a person, like of their face that I can use on a forum. You know what I mean? Like I could use my little profile, and I was like, these are great. It's just like little headshots of different people, and it's all kind of in one big, a piece of art. So I really did like the bezel that went around it.
Nice. If I did want to buy one of these, I guess because it's not a cabinet, did you find prices on kits? Are they available? Is it?
Yeah, I didn't find any complete kits for sale, but I looked on eBay for completed auctions, and it looks like you could get the cheapest PCB that I saw just by itself was $50. I saw an auction that had two for $60, and then there were a couple that were around $200. So, you know, it's eBay, so things are going to fluctuate. I mean, that would have to be like the world's biggest magic sword fan. It might be the guy that they base it on. It could be He-Man. Like
he's
He-Man.
Got all the kits for this game now.
Exactly. But, yeah, it does. I mean, you know, $50, $100. My guess is there are a lot of magic sword, like you might buy this cabinet, you know, see this at an auction, and then it would very quickly get turned into something else. That would be my guess, you know.
And that's interesting that you mentioned this. I'm reading a little bit more about the CPS one board right now, and this was the board that Street Fighter 2 was built on. So I would imagine that people were buying this, you know, you could buy, if you knew about it, you could buy like this for $50 and turn it into a Street Fighter 2 cabinet pretty easily. A little bit of trivia here. Apparently this was also used in Capcom's CPS Changer, which I guess was an attempt at a home console. I'd never heard of it, but it was supposed to be the Capcom's answer to the Neo Geo AES, and I guess it did not do very well.
Huh, no, I've never seen one of those. I thought the most interesting thing about the control panel is that you have two players with 8-way joysticks, but only two buttons. And JAMA, as you know, supports 2 8-way sticks and 3 buttons. So it seems like, I don't understand why they didn't put 3 buttons, because then you could have easily swapped it out for any other, you know, JAMA game. I don't know. It just seems like a weird choice to go where you hit both. I mean, you can't be saving that much by leaving one button off, you know, I wouldn't think.
Like, it just tells you that even Capcom didn't think much of this game.
I think the Lord Drachmar stole the third button from them. Right. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like, you know, if you're Capcom, that's obviously the JAMA standard is 3 buttons per person. So I don't know why they did it that way.
Very strange. And like I said, this isn't, I mean, we've been kind of poking fun at it. It's not a horrible game. It's just very bland and not interesting. You know, you could, like you said, buy a kit and make one if you wanted to, but it plays just fine in MAME. So yeah, you don't need a kit. I had no problems. I didn't encounter, I wish I had the real cabinet, because it just doesn't feel the same. So
no, if I had the real cabinet, I'd sell it tomorrow.
or turn it into something you do want to play.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, we are having a little bit of fun with this one. It wasn't terrible. It was, I guarantee if you walked out of an arcade and you asked a kid, you're like, okay, there was a game in there where you're a guy with a magic sword. What was that game called? They wouldn't be able to tell you.
Right.
They'd be like, I don't remember. You know, was it Rastan?
All right. Well, I don't think either of us care that much, but how'd you do, Rob?
My highest score was 100,256. I have no idea how the scoring works in this game. I noticed that I saw that a lot of the, when I would get things out of chests, I would get 1,000 points. But I don't know. I mean, it seems like some weird number, but that was 100,256, and that was right near the end of the second level. I got to the point where I think they're bats that were attacking me. I don't know, because I just started running like hell. I was like when I stay and fight, there's no my strategy was flight to the right. I just started running, and I thought maybe if I get to the end, I could get some points. But I got to the end, and somebody killed me. So that that's what happened to me.
All right. Well, I did a little bit better than you this week. And again, I don't care. I got about halfway through the third level.
Oh, nice.
And I think, part of the problem, like I said, the game is just so forgettable. I forgot to play this game a lot. And I don't know, maybe I could have done better if I'd spent more time with it, but I ended up with 283,680 points.
Holy command. Man, I got to step my game up.
I think, again, a lot of this has to do with picking up bonuses, and I'm pretty sure that there were scaling points for, you know, if you killed monster A while it was doing activity B, you got more points than if it was doing activity C or something. But and so you could sort of pile up the bonuses. I found, again, it was there's a lot going on visually on the screen, and they don't do anything to make the scores really stand out. Like, you'll kill something and you might get 900 points and it's on the screen for half a second. You may not even know that you got it. The high scores are kind of blended into the background, and they don't really attract your attention because it's, again, designed to draw quarters out of your pocket so you continue playing rather than to give you a high score, good time feeling. So, I just don't care about this. This is not a game that I will probably ever play again.
No, I wouldn't play it. I wouldn't, like I said, it's hard. I want to stress, it's not that it's a terrible game. It's just that it's kind of a forgettable game.
Right. It's just blah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, what about next week?
Next week, we're going to turn again to Lord Drachmar.
I'm just going to keep playing this again.
And we're not playing this game next week. Next week, we're going to play something that sounds like this.
All right, well, that doesn't sound anything at all like the game we just played.
Thank goodness.
Yes. And thank you all for listening, and Rob for joining me. Again, I hope that you're still having a good time and you're not already considering walking off the show.
I wasn't until I heard your score this week. Oh, my gosh. Next week, I'm bringing it, baby.
All right. Well, again, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week.